Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? For just $20 an episode, we'd read your name here. We'd tell everyone about how awesome you are, and we'd sing your praises. All you have to do is go to nerdandtie.com and click on the sponsorship area information on the right sidebar or down below on the mobile version of the site. Sponsor an episode. We'll talk about how awesome you are. It's that simple. Do it now, or else Nikizumi is going to have to go one more day without food. We've decided this is his sole income now, even though that makes no sense. On this episode of Nerd and Tie, the Marvel Cinematic Universe finally has a new Spider-Man. Rumblings are going on in the Ghostbusters universe, and they're all good. Nick is going to talk about some new releases of old anime. I went to OzCon. Saskatoon Blitz is dead. Arthur Suidam is a bit of a dick. An Anime Matsuri organizer has been accused of sexual harassment. But we promise there's good stuff on the episode. We swear.
Somewhere, hopefully.
And
maybe. Oh, God.
Oh, God. Oh, God. And welcome to Nerd and Tie.
Welcome.
Our camera angle for Nick has gone insane immediately because I forgot to save a setting. But we'll fix that in a moment. But to start things off, I'm one of your hosts, Trey Dorn, and joining me, of course, is Nikizumi.
You can see me again.
Who you can see, even if he's a little tiny in his box right now, but I'll fix that in a second. And sadly, not with us this episode is Professor Firsters because stuff.
Dead to me once again.
Yeah,
stuff. Dead to me.
Yeah, he was a little busy.
Sure, we'll go with that.
He has a life. We were going to try to bring in one of our other regular guest hosts to fill in this episode. But sadly, Gen, who usually fills in for one of us, that's her new job, is to fill in for one of us. We just haven't told her yet. She was at Anime Expo this weekend, so she couldn't make it. And we were going to try to get Sean Orange of Famicom Dojo on, but he just had a child. And he had a third
excuses.
Son, so congratulations, Sean Orange. You have found the only excuse. I will not criticize anyone for not appearing on the show. And those are the only two people
who knew
last minute.
he could deal with it. He's got babies.
But, I mean, it is the third kid. I mean, is that really the important one to be there for?
Well, the fact of the matter is we baby babies too much. If we weren't always, like, coddling them, they'd probably walk a lot faster. Start walking, babies. I'm holding it against you.
For anybody watching the episode live, we have not been able to successfully open our own chat room, so hopefully everyone in there is well-behaved. And sorry we can't read your live feedback this episode, because that's the way life goes, and everything is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Have you seen Terminator Genesis yet?
I have not. I've kind of had mixed feelings about it, so I haven't had a chance to go check it out.
I went out and saw it on Friday, and saw it at the drive-in, you know, because everything's better in the open air with carnival food. I actually enjoyed it a lot.
Everyone I've talked to said it's pretty good.
I liked it a lot more than Terminator Salvation and Terminator 3, for sure. It's a much better film than either of those two. It's obviously nowhere near as good as Terminator 2.
Well, right, but Terminator 2 is like the standard we hold all sequels
Terminator
to,
2 is like the epitome of what you could do with that franchise. You're never going to make a Terminator movie better than Terminator 2.
That's on Netflix right now for people who haven't seen that. Haven't watched Terminator 2, what are you doing? Go watch that.
Yeah, I argue that Terminator Genesis is better than the original 1984 Terminator.
Oh, wow.
But that's also because I don't hold the original 1984 Terminator in that much regard. It's okay.
I heard Matt Smith is pretty fantastic in this one. I don't want to spoil too much.
Matt Smith's role's not huge, but it's important, and he's quite good. Mm. I think this movie did reaffirm that I cannot tell the difference between Michael Rosenbaum and Jai Courtney. I can't.
Well, that's
They are vocal.
Sorry, like, Flash Luthor.
If I hear the voice, I cannot tell which one's talking. And if I see them, it takes me 5 minutes to remember I'm not looking at Michael Rosenbaum.
Wow. Wow.
I watched all of Divergent thinking it was Michael Rosenbaum.
I didn't see that movie either. I honestly spent this weekend like watching anime, playing Metal Gear, and working on cosplay. So,
yeah. So Terminator Genisys, I will say, I'll put it on the level of the Sarah Connor Chronicles. If you like the Sarah Connor Chronicles, you'll probably like Genisys. It plays a lot with the time stream. It's people who aren't ready to handle a multi-fractured, splintering reality really can't handle the Terminator. The secret of the Terminator franchise is that it – well, okay, here's the thing. The first two movies presented as though it's like a self-contained loop, but it's not.
Right.
It's not. The only way the Terminator franchise makes any sense is if you view it as a splintered, recurring timeline where it keeps changing. And by that, you do have to accept that it's at least the third timeline by the time you get to the first Terminator movie.
Right. Right.
And that there's a version of reality that started out where Kyle Reese was not John Connor's father.
Right. Like, that's always the thing that I remember when I went to see Salvation with someone, they were really hoping that would be the big reveal, was like the Christian Bale, John Connor, has that like realization that they have some sort of realization that he can't be the hero who he was made out to be this whole time, because he was never that person, because his father is from the future and not the,
So that's why.
Theoretical physics. Yeah. I
mean, so it's I found Genisys enjoyable, but I know, like, I saw some people who like got really mad and hated it. So it's a split opinion on this one from the fandom.
The two people I've talked to about it liked it. So.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's don't expect the best movie you've ever seen, but it's a decent flick. You know, speaking of franchises that tend to get restarted all the time.
What could this possibly be in reference to?
You know, right
after. I can't imagine what.
Not long after our last episode a couple weeks ago, Marvel made a huge announcement, which is kind of important, and that is Tom Holland is taking over the role of Spider-Man in the films that will be set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yes, Tom Holland, yet another white guy, and our second one to have a British accent.
Yep.
See, the evolution of Spider-Man's is important, as the first one, you get to, well, in the 21st century, I should say. We'll stick 21st century live action. Right. We're not going to deal with, like, the, you know, Spider-Man and all that stuff. And, like, so you start with Tobey Maguire.
I love Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. You start with Tobey Maguire, totally American. Then you move to Andrew Garfield, born in America, raised in England, and now with the third one, we've gone full British. The important thing, though, is apparently it's a skinny white dude.
Yeah, as soon as I saw the picture of him, I'm like, what a dork. This kid looks like a total dork.
Well, to be fair, that's the only thing he's going for. Yeah, that's good. But it doesn't change the fact that Marvel had an opportunity to go a different way, and they didn't. And it's because Sony, for one, insisted that it had to be a white dude if it was Peter Parker.
I just don't get it. Now, don't get me wrong. Nothing against this Tom Holland kid, because like I saw like the video of him doing some parkour and stuff.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was pretty baller. That was pretty baller. And the fact that he was able to go toe-to-toe with Robert Downey Jr. for a screen test and came out in one piece, I think that's really, like, nothing against this kid.
And I think he's going to be fine in the role. I don't think there's any criticism mm-hmm. of his acting ability or, I mean, he played Billy Elliot on the stage.
Right.
Musicals and Spider-Man, how has that ever gone wrong? But still, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with him as an actor. I'm just disappointed that it's a missed opportunity. And that's really what it comes down to, is I lament the missed opportunity to add diversity to the Marvel Cinematic Universe due to a slavish insistence on following some sort of canonical ethnicity, which doesn't matter in a new reality, because we had no problem changing Nick Fury into a black guy.
Well, I mean, even, like, look at Marvel, like, with their soft reboot that they're doing with Secret Wars right now. Like, on all of their promo materials, Peter Parker isn't even front and center. I mean, hell, they put old man Steve Rogers on it, but front and center, their spider people are Spider-Gwen and Miles Morales, which are both fantastic comics, for the record. But, so, yeah. I mean, there's so much diversity in the Spider-Man family. And even if you didn't decide to go with the comics, yeah, there's nothing wrong with having black Peter Parker.
Yeah,
he's still freaking Peter Parker. It's just a different universe Peter Parker.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Is it's like, you can just make a black Peter Parker.
Like, I mean, God, like, we didn't have a, at least I didn't run into anyone throwing any fits that Iris West is suddenly black. I mean, who cares?
Well, I'm sure there was somebody.
I'm sure there was, and they
someone
suck,
on
and
some back
racist
message board on Stormfront had a fit that day.
And they're welcome to be wrong, but you know what? A little bit of diversity goes a long way. I mean, hell, if I have referenced Candace Patton just a couple weeks ago, heard that cute story about the little girl watching The Flash with her parents, saw Candace Patton on The Flash, and she was so excited to feel represented by a TV show. Parent posts about it on Twitter, and Candace Patton sends the little girl a bunch of Flash merch. The point of this story is, one, diversity matters, and two, Candace Patton is a pretty awesome human being.
And three, how can I get Candace Patton to send me Flash merchandise?
See what we can do. Yeah, I don't know. It's disappointing that they didn't go more diverse. I'm sure Holland will be great.
Yeah, that's...
This is going to be a really crowded movie.
Oh my God, yes. Well, it's like it's ostensibly a Captain America movie,
but the Russos did it well in Winter Soldier. So,
Yeah, I mean the Russos.
Well, I go back to Winter Soldier. Yeah, there were a lot of characters in that. They just knew who to focus on.
Yeah, so I hope that some of these are just really small cameos.
It's like, whoa, Wakanda sure is cool. Thanks. Hey, well, thankfully, I'm glad that they're not going. I'm hoping they don't feel the need to introduce Spider-Man. I'm really hoping that we're at the point that everyone just knows who Spider-Man is, so we can just be like, oh, hey, Spider-Man.
What? Just
literally,
because
everyone knows you.
Because in the last 15 years, he's had 5 movies?
Yeah, probably that.
Dear Lord. By the way, if they make me watch Uncle Ben die again, when Sony comes out with a new movie, I am going to drive to Sony Pictures and just punch someone.
I loved how I loved a post I saw on Tumblr about that. How if I need to watch if Uncle Ben's going to die again, I'm going to jump into the screen and kill him myself. God,
I don't want to watch Uncle. Like there are two things I don't need to ever see again. Uncle Ben die and Martha and Thomas Wayne die. That's it.
Don't worry.
I'm done. But guess what? I'm going to have to watch both. So, like, well, okay, so I might not have to watch Uncle Ben.
We don't know about Uncle Ben.
We don't know
about
Uncle Ben.
Might always.
We know that they shot the Wayne's death scene.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it, Zack Snyder. All right, so Sony's making us watch another, like, Nick, I need some news about Sony doing something right.
Okay, so, hey, it's funny you'd mention that, because it's them pulling out of a nosedive, as far as I'm concerned. Previously, we had mentioned that Sony was, in addition to their all-female Ghostbusters movie, working on a second all-male Ghostbusters movie that Channing Tatum is attached to. Well, finally, some good news on that front when Channing Tatum mentioned in an interview that he has no idea what's going on with that, and it's probably not moving forward.
Yay!
Yay! I'm excited for this current Ghostbusters reboot. We don't need another all dudes version. We have an all dudes version. They're two of the funniest movies ever made.
Yeah.
Yes, no, I like Ghostbusters 2. Fight me, bro.
I mean, Ghostbusters 2. I just don't think it's as good as Ghostbusters 1. But you know, frankly,
no, it's not.
Frankly, who's shocked that the sequel's not as good as one of the most remarkable action comedies ever made?
There's a lot of internet hate for Ghostbusters 2. I don't know when it started. A friend of mine and I were like, before YouTube, I didn't know people hated that movie that much. And now it's like, there's so much hate for that movie. I don't know why.
Well, the painting, the Viggo gave me nightmares as a kid.
Okay, that's fair. That scared the crap out of me, too. But
like, that's the thing. It's like, Ghostbusters 2 is an inherently scarier movie than the first one.
That's because there's goo, and goo is just disgusting.
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's like, it's genuinely like they build up the terror with that one. That, you know,
I can see that.
Which they don't try to do with the first. Like, well, I mean, they try to scare you with the first one, but the first one, you know what it is? Like, I watched that first one. I was even younger when I watched the first one, and I, you know, it was scary, like, a little bit as a kid, and like, there were parts that made me jump, but it was mostly like, that looks cool.
Pretty much.
The only thing that really scared me as a kid in the first one is the librarian turning around.
Oh, I thought that scene was hilarious. I've always thought that scene was hilarious.
Well, right. You have to remember, though, like, you know, think about it as like a six-year-old.
I don't remember when I first saw that movie. I was in grade school, but
anyways.
But so, yeah, at least finally a good decision on this.
Well, it's right. Because someone at Sony woke up and said, hey, we're sabotaging our own film. We're sabotaging the remake. You know what I mean? It's
I know what you mean. My camera just fell down.
I know. It was funny. I got to see your scene.
Isn't it wonderful? Did you see the spiders? Did you see Komunga?
No.
He's up there.
Okay. So anyways, but someone at Sony said that, you know, we're going to finally, you know, give this film a shot. And if it takes off, we'll build on the franchise there instead of what effectively the Channing Tatum film would have done was delegitimize the Paul Feig movie, you know, because and frankly, like Kristen Wiig, Megan McCarthy, Leslie Jones, Kate McKinnon. Okay, so Kate McKinnon's fine. We knew. But Leslie Jones, hilarious. Leslie Jones is hilarious. Oh, my God.
The point is, yeah, it has a
give
really
me as much
cap.
Leslie Jones as you can. Just, like, put her on screen for, like, an hour. And it's like nothing else has to happen, just her talking, and I would love this movie. So
the,
we do.
The only male Ghostbusters thing that I would want out of this movie is I think it would be really funny if Aykroyd and Marie would just like cameo, not like in major parts, just right. Have them show up for like a second and say something like really smartassy to each other, and then just go right back to the current Ghostbusters. It just like
yeah. Yeah, I like Chris Hemsworth is also going to be playing effectively Janine.
That's good though. That's...
No, I'm right. I'm like, I'm all for that. I mean, he's no Annie Potts, but it'll work. I'm really excited for this film. And you know what I'm excited about is that we now know what the uniforms are going to look like and the proton packs.
I love these designs.
Yeah, Paul Feig has tweeted out the designs of both the proton pack and the new uniforms. And the new uniforms are effectively very similar to the old uniforms, just with an additional like set of orange stripes. And then the proton pack actually looks like an upside-down proton pack. I don't know how to describe it beyond that.
Well, like for the main uniforms, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
These are the uniforms. There are coveralls with orange stripes and the classic logo still emblazoned on the shoulder.
Just how it should look.
And for the proton pack, it very dirty, very grungy. They didn't go fancy. They did put the circular bit on top instead of at the bottom.
I'm still glad that they went for grungy for just a piece of junk looking thing. Not
right. It's likely a slightly smaller design only because, you know, frankly, the actresses are just smaller human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And so for navigating a scene, it's kind of important. But overall, I think these are really good, and I think it's really nice and traditional, and it feels like Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it's true to the original. There's a little bit of their own spin on it, but I mean, like with the uniforms, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
The brown coveralls, you know, they look good. They fit. It's the Ghostbusters image. The proton pack. It should be this kind of grimy looking piece of junk that a college
together
professors
nuclear
together.
Reactor.
Yeah, exactly. Like it shouldn't be an iPhone store. It should be this. Yeah. It should look like it's made from garbage. So yeah, I like it. I like both. I get more excited every time we get something about this movie. Like, I went from being just kind of like, eh, Ghostbusters remake to, ah, Ghostbusters remake. Like, I'm really happy for this movie.
Yeah.
I think it could be good.
Might have called Melissa McCarthy Megan McCarthy earlier, and I don't care. Because I'm just mostly excited about Leslie Jones. Look, I'm happy that Suki from Gilmore Girls is doing lots of good stuff. But Leslie Jones...
I like Kristen Wiig. She's been
Kristen Wiig is very fun. You know what? Honestly, I have no complaints about anyone in this cast.
Yeah, the casting is phenomenal. I think it's going to be funny.
It's like, okay, so I'll admit I'm not as excited about Kate McKinnon, but not because I think she'll do a bad job, but just because I'm just so much more excited about everybody else.
I've been there.
Yeah.
This is going in a good direction. I'm positive about it. You know, speaking of throwbacks to classic things, look at that. Anime Expo was also this last weekend, which we mentioned our friend Gen was at. And there have been some pretty big announcements on the classic anime front for stuff getting released here in the States. And anyone who's really into the old school anime scene... like me, probably had their brain hurt a little bit when they heard some of these announcements. Because I'm not going to lie, a lot of this I never saw coming. Ever.
Ever?
Well, okay.
No, never.
Never. No. Anyway.
Ever. Sorry.
I came home Thursday to someone writing on my Facebook wall that the novels that of Legend of the Galactic Heroes had gotten licensed. Legend of the Galactic Heroes, for those who don't know, is a long, long Japanese space opera series that was eventually adapted into the longest OVA ever, with like 110 straight-to-video episodes. And this is like an 80s OVA, so you're talking like $100 a laser disc for one episode. And they kept this going for a series.
That's amazing.
It was – now, I was excited just for the novels because this is one of those things where people were like, well, the anime is huge. It's literally epic. No one's going to want to license it. There was an attempt to have a U.S. release a few years ago. It was going to be one box set with all of the episodes and movies, but it was a pre-order-only thing that was going to be $1,000. And, yeah, no one really took them up on it. So it was just one of those things where people were like, well, that's never going to happen. Literally, like, 3 hours later, Discotheque Media is like, hey, not Discotheque, I get there's all these little companies that sprung up. Sentai Filmworks, who are the company that came up from the remains of ADV after ADV fell apart a few years ago, suddenly announces, hey, we picked up Legend of the Galactic Heroes. What's up? And, yeah, it's insane. If you've ever wanted to see, like, anime space opera at its most political, really, really well, and honestly, shockingly violent, Legend of the Galactic Heroes is the way to go. It was directed by Noboru Ishiguro, who is also famous for his work on the original Macross and the Macross movie, and lots of other space epics from that period. the show is beautiful. The movies are beautiful. Reinhard von Lohengrin is an amazing anti-hero, and I cannot wait to own this show.
That's just a good name.
Isn't that a fantastic name? Reinhard von Lohengrin. The only thing that makes me sad about it was I was at a panel a few years ago. Taliesin Jaffe, big director in the anime scene, was hosting. And he said if he could direct any show, it would be Legend of the Galactic Heroes. He even said at the panel, if you asked him right now, if he had to cast right away, he already knows who would play Reinhard. Like, it was like, and that one, now granted, that was back in 2008, but still, I wouldn't hold my breath on this getting dubbed just because it's an old show, and a lot of these 80s shows, if they get modern releases, they're almost never dubbed. I mean, you look, Captain Harlock, the original, got a release, no dub, same with Galaxy Express 3-9, the TV series. So I'm still excited to get it. Then, because my weekend wasn't going good enough, I guess, Right Stuff International, and Nozomi Entertainment followed that up with, hey guys, remember when we bought the Gundam license? Well, guess what? We're re-releasing the original Gundam, this time on Blu-ray. And I'm like, oh, low-budget 70s animation on Blu-ray. That'll work out great. Thanks, guys. Then they're like, we're re-releasing Zeta Gundam. Well, that's a perfect show. Thanks, guys. Oh, and remember all the shows that were never in the States before? Double Zeta, Victory, the Turn A movies, Gundam X, all of those getting released.
Okay.
All of them.
All of them?
All of them.
All of them.
I am floored.
Crap damn.
Crap damn indeed. Filling in my holes in the original timeline with Double Zeta finally coming out, because previously we had the original Gundam and Zeta, then we had Char's Counterattack, which is immediately after Double Zeta, but Double Zeta never had a U.S. Version, so this, partly because that show's kind of terrible, but the whole's been it. But more excitingly, and Victory Gundam is also pretty terrible, so not as exciting for me, but Gundam X, I can't wait to recommend that to people. I can't wait to tell them, hey, go pick this up on DVD, because it's basically Mad Max meets Gundam. It's post-apocalyptic. The war all ended years ago, and your main character is a scrap collector who accidentally stumbles upon a Federation Gundam from during the war, and he fights other scavengers with it. And it's really cool, and the animation is superb, and it is the only Gundam series other than the original to get canceled. And I think wrongfully so, because it was a fantastic little series, and I can't wait to be able to say, hey, if you haven't checked out Gundam X, go buy and write stuff. Because if the Turn A DVDs are any indication, it's probably not going to be very expensive at all. Oh. So, great news. Yeah. Gundam, Legend of the Galactic Heroes. Basically, if you were into 80s, 90s hard sci-fi anime, this was a good weekend for you. Holy crap. Oh, my God. So, yeah, I'm coming down from that. Those were just really big announcements.
Take a deep breath.
I know. Okay, something to chill me out. Low-budget 70s animation on Blu-ray.
So how are they doing the transfer? Like, how do they do the transfer on those with those old ones?
I have no idea. I know it might just be that in Japan, the original series and the Gundam movies did recently get a Blu-ray release. So it might just be copying that, but I don't know.
So are they spending the time to redigitize? Like, do they have the, like, was it made on film and then converted to video?
Think so.
Okay.
Yeah, because there were all sorts of, like, Sunrise has been really unclear with what condition they've had the original Gundam series in, even. Yeah, and
because the worst case scenario is that it just looks as good as the old Laserdisc release.
Mm-hmm. Which honestly is not bad. I mean, and for when for when Mobile Suit Gundam, the 1979 show, came out, it actually looks pretty good for a show of its era, but it was done on a shoestring budget.
Right.
Before Sunrise was a studio that anyone cared about. So, yeah. I mean, it's only going to look so good, but the story is timeless. So, I'm looking forward to recommending that to people again, too. So, all sorts of good news.
Neat.
Go watch Gundam.
I have absolutely nothing else to contribute on that topic.
Sorry, I know. All stuff outside Trey's realms of experience, but...
Yay! Well, look, I watch old anime. I watched a lot of it. I just didn't really ever watch, like, the Gundam franchise.
Well, to your credit, though, like, the Gundam franchise didn't get released proper in America until 1998. And even then, it didn't get, like, a widespread release until 99.
Yeah.
So...
I mean,
because that was when Cartoon Network picked up Wing.
Yeah, because Gundam Wing was the first Gundam most American fans were exposed to. Which is, you know, it's not Universal Century, obviously. It's a completely, you know, weird remake where everything kind of feels like slightly close to, like you've even got like
it's
a bad
Reader's
guy.
Digest Gundam.
It's like you've even got a bad guy who looks like Discount Char.
Well, he's like a Char if Char was like manic, because Gundam Wing takes place over the course of a year, but the character Zex Marquise has all of Char's character moments, but like the things that it took Char 10 years to go through, Zex goes through in 1 year. So he goes from antagonist to anti-hero to protagonist to genocidal villain. All in the course of a year. Like, I can only assume that he needs medication.
He's like the knockoff Transformer toy you find at Big Lots.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He's not...
It resembles... No, yeah, that resembles Starscream.
Mm-hmm, and I mean, you'll get some of the same fun, I guess, but he's...
Yeah.
It's all right. Not nearly as good. Yeah, so anyway.
All right.
Wing still isn't getting re-released, so...
Really? That's funny, yeah. Because I think Wing would do really well, because you got a bunch of people are nostalgic for it in the U.S.
To this day, when I host the Gundam panel at various cons in the Midwest area, I still find people who swear Wing is the only show that they will watch, or it's the only Gundam that they care for. And I feel bad for them, but
well,
I respect
them. I think it's because it's way more accessible. Universal Century is a complicated... miasma of series going back, especially since Wing was created in a more, I mean, obviously it's not modern anymore because, you know, it's 2015, you know, Wing.
But it's self-contained.
It's self-contained, and it's a much more modern animation style than, say, if you want to go back to the original Gundam, where, you know, because, and that puts off a lot of new viewers, just because animation got better even in, like, the 10 years after Gundam was started. You know
oh,
what
God,
I mean?
Yeah. You compare the original Gundam series to the first sequel, Zeta Gundam, and it's not even fair.
Well, I mean, what year did Gundam first come out in?
79 was the first series.
Right.
April of 1979.
Compare anime series made in 1979 to anime series made in 1987, even. And
it's funny you said that, because Zeta came out in 86, so
okay, dead on. Good. Arbitrary. I was picking an arbitrary number based on take a look at the difference between the animation of the original Gundam and, say, Pat Labor.
It's light years
different. It's like, because I'm not even talking about, like, you know, the addition of computers animation to anime, which is made really nice effects, really inexpensive. I mean, you take a look at Attack on Titan, and frankly, you're getting a level of I take Attack on Titan as a good example of computer animation in an anime series. There are lots of bad examples where it's used poorly and badly, and we don't need to talk about those. But as a good example, Attack on Titan's use of CGI.
Totally agree.
Even before that was accessible to animators, you know. Conventional animation in Japan got a lot better in that decade after the original Gundam. So Like, I think as new viewers coming into the original Gundam, it's especially hard because it doesn't matter how – because, I mean, the secret is to animation, it doesn't matter how good the story is or the writing if people aren't captured by the visuals. And that is it's why it's easier to get into old manga than it is to get into old anime.
That's why when I'm recommending classic Gundam to people – half the time, if they're not used to old animation, I just say read the origin.
Yeah,
it's a comic that came out within the last 10 years, but it's by the same illustrator, so it's the right visual style. But
yeah,
you don't have to deal with crappy 70s animation.
Well, it's like even just coloring techniques in the 70s weren't that great. Because I haven't watched a lot of the original, but I've seen I've seen parts of the original Gundam, because I don't like to judge anything I don't want to look like. And it looks like it's from the 70s and it doesn't look great.
No, it does not. No. It's an acquired taste.
And that's why Gundam Wing is way more accessible, because people who watched Gundam Wing and got into it then try to go back to, try to watch Universal Century stuff, and then they go back to the beginning of that and they see this thing that doesn't look anything like the quality of what they're expecting animation wise, and they get turned off by it. And I think that's why, again, it's a roundabout way to say they should re-release Gundam Wing in the U.S.
That's the other reason why I'm going to recommend X to people too, because X looks a lot like Gundam Wing. So all those people who are like, I wanted more Gundam Wing, go watch X. Pre-order X. I'm serious. Nerd and Ty, all of you listeners, if you need a good post-apocalyptic anime to watch, watch Gundam X, because I want to talk about it with you. So moving on. That's it.
All right.
My last plug, watch Gundam X, damn it.
Moving on, we had a lot of stuff happen in the convention scene this last week.
Oh, boy.
All right, so we're going to start out with the good stuff and then slowly descend into madness. So we're going to start out with last weekend I was at OzCon in West Plains, Missouri.
Okay.
Which is a small gaming, primarily gaming, but multi-genre convention held in a town of 12,000 people. It's like, I don't know what the exact attendance figures are. I know that it was higher than last year, and last year it was like 500. So I think it was in the 700s attendees. The full disclosure, I was a guest of honor, so I did not pay to go.
It sounds like it was fun.
I was brought in. I'm going to talk about it, but I want people to know that, like, normally when I talk about events, it's something I pay to go to, but this is one
right.
I didn't pay to go to. So I want, in case that colors perception, it's a small convention. It was phenomenally fun. It's a 3-day convention held at the West Plains Civic Center. It's put on by the local university's, Gaming Club and ACM, which is a computer science association thing. I used to be a member of the student ACM when I was a computer science major in college before I changed majors. And it was really fun.
I love LittleCon, so it sounds like...
Oh, my God. This was, like, the perfect, like... So, like, I know that West Plains, Missouri is, like, not near... anything.
Right.
But the fact is that this was a phenomenally fun convention. It was really interestingly set up because they're dealing with the Civic Center. And so it's all mostly one giant hall that's subdivided, where on one half you had the vendors, and then on the other half, on one half was like the vendor area, and they actually had a couple of local restaurants, like a local cafe and then a local pizza place, set up like food vending.
I love when cons do that.
Which was so great because I didn't have to leave the building to get food. So they were by the vendors, and it was just two rows of vendors, but it was the right amount for the amount of attendees, where
right.
there were always people coming by. I talked with multiple vendors who all made their money back, which as a person who reviews conventions, it's important to get the ratio right to attendee to vendor. And I didn't talk to all the vendors, but all the vendors I did talk to made money, and there was a huge variety of stuff there.
That is, for the record, the scariest part about being a vendor is going somewhere, especially when things are really tight, and being like, I sure hope that I make money off this. Well, not that I'm speaking from personal experience here.
Yeah,
no, but I may have gone to EverCon and like almost overdrafted in the hopes that I would make something that weekend.
Yeah, it's also in the same, like on the other half, divided by a curtain from the room was the video gaming area on one side, and then where they had a bunch of consoles, and then on the other side they had like a tabletop gaming area with like tables set up for gaming, and they actually had some locally developed games because it's being put on by people in a video game design program as part of it. It's local, including a game that used the Oculus Rift. So I got to use the Oculus. I was just happy to finally get to play with an Oculus Rift.
Nice.
Yeah. It's fun. little disorienting, but fun. I'm one of those people, though, who gets sick when I use 3D glasses. So, like, you know, right. I'm in the minority. But I was like, this is really fun. I feel ill. I'm having fun, though. I feel ill. I'm having, like, turn my head all around. And then they also had, like, you know, so they had panel tracks and they had, a gaming programming. It was perfectly scaled for what they were doing. I was really impressed. I was a cosplay judge. So, I was a cosplay judge, so I got to actually, you know, sit through prejudging and do all that. And you at home can hear me redialing Nick because we lost our connection briefly here. So I'm going to keep talking while I try to reconnect with him. it was a lot of fun. It's a great little convention if you're ever in if you're in Missouri or if you're in, you know, anywhere in southern Illinois or northern Arkansas or whatever the local area is. It's definitely worth checking out. The convention organizers are really nice people. If you're in that area and you feel like volunteering to work a convention, that is also pretty great. So you should totally do that. And do we have you back, Nick?
Yeah, sorry about that. The for some reason, my Skype just decided it didn't want to work anymore.
Yeah, we do not have you on video yet.
Just a minute.
All right. I kept talking while you were gone.
Fine. It's all good. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It just suddenly, my Skype was like, you're not online anymore. I'm like, I don't think that's right.
It's okay. We can stick you with voice for the rest of the episode.
Might as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll just go audio.
All right, audio. We'll go audio only. You lovely folks at home will still get to look at me. So yeah, no, it's OzCon is awesome. It's I can't.
The way you were describing the layout sounds like my ideal way that I like those small gaming cons to be, because I've gone to enough of them now that I'm like, there's a certain setup that I feel comfortable in, and that sounds like they're doing it right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun. And so I was saying I was a cosplay judge, and I was really impressed by the level of some of the cosplay there. It was really incredible. There was some like really, really great, like world class stuff, which especially for a con with less than 1,000 attendees is, you know,
really. Yeah, wow. Because, I mean, normally, like, that's one of those things about the smaller cons with cosplay. I tend to find that there's a lot. You don't really get like the really over the top stuff at the smaller cons, but in some ways I find that refreshing because I see like these younger kids who it's like their first costume they've ever made, and there's their Attack on Titan 3D gear that they made from like cereal boxes and soda bottles, and I'm just like, that is just neat.
Yeah.
But,
well, it's we had like it was a really wide variety of cosplay there. Mm-hmm. There were people who had like, you know, kind of chunk things together as best they could out of everything. But then we had people who were like effectively could have walked off a movie set with this, with their outfits, with light up parts and all that, and perfect recreations of, you know, video game stuff. And it was impressive. Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. And so, yeah, no, it's, and I know that they were, this is an aside, but I know that they were financially successful enough, so they'll be back.
Well, that's good. I'm glad for them.
So it's, I'm a big fan of small regional cons. I think this was a really well-run one. There was one particular staffer who I thought was a little unprofessional, their volunteer coordinator, but I'm told that she's leaving the organization. So yeah, no, if you are anywhere near West Plains, Missouri, go do it next year. Just go, just do it. You will not regret it. It is an awesome convention. OzCon. Hilariously though, it was happening the same weekend as Oz Comic Con in Australia. So Twitter got really confusing because, yeah, there'll be different weekends next year.
Yeah, that might have been a bit of a
Okay, because OzCon in West Plains, Missouri is called that because it's in the Ozarks.
Right.
Which, although I do contend that maybe they should be calling it OzCon.
Ooh.
Well, because it's the OZ is short for Ozarks, right? So shouldn't it be right. OzCon?
Oh, well, it could be. I don't know. I hear OzCon, and I just think that you really like the second Millennium Kamen Rider series. That's all I can think of. But Oz,
okay,
Tatoba. I'm sorry. Moving.
I don't get your reference because I don't watch Tokusatsu stuff.
And I watch too much of it because I'm a 12-year-old Japanese kid at heart.
We all, I always think of you as 12, so that just sort of makes sense.
Damn it.
All right, so
moving forward.
We should move on.
Or I guess moving down.
Down. God.
So, just last fortnight we talked about a little event called Saskatchewan Blitz.
Saskatoon, excuse me. It's in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada.
That's Sasquatch Blitz. That's what we're calling. No.
Saskatoon Blitz.
Anyway,
Saskatoon Blitz. Or anyway, Sask Blitz.
Anyway, Sask Blitz. I should show it some respect. I don't want to speak ill of the dead. Yeah, we talked about how badly things are going with their Artist Alley, and then they're compounding that with really bizarre online responses and then taking down their Facebook page. Well, as it so happens, it looks like Saskatoon Blitz is dead. They are no longer going to be a thing. Her name was Laura...
Patricia Ha.
Okay, Patricia... Okay. The legal owner of Saskatoon Blitz has stepped down officially as its chair.
According to the autoresponder on her email.
Yes, according to the autoresponder on her email, no one else has been left in charge. And according to some insiders, it's over. That's it.
Yeah, it's okay. So to understand, like, so with a lot of cons, you have a legal structure where you have like nonprofit cons have a board or convention chair or a director or president, an elected position who's in charge, and the organization is separate. Saskatoon Blitz was run by the Saskatoon Love Anime Group.
That is a beautifully weeaboo name.
Or SLAG, as it's written out as SLLAG. But that organization is solely owned by Laura Patricia Ha. It is a sole ownership. And so when she says she's resigning, she's literally just taking the ball and going home. There is no one to take over. And the website has disappeared from the internet. And by disappeared from the internet, I mean like it doesn't resolve to a server anymore. You try to go to their website and you don't get a 404 page. You get nothing. Nothing. Like it will not resolve. And the Twitter account has gone silent. The Facebook page is gone. According to an anonymous Reddit user, which I know that this is not necessarily the most researchable. An anonymous Reddit user claims to have sat down with Laura Patricia Ha and says that the event is over and done, and that they're not doing it anymore, period.
Seems legit.
We did actually here at Nerd and Tie, we did get an additional email from a Saskatoon Blitz. I did not send this to Nick, so he doesn't know about it.
We
got an email from a Blitz volunteer, where it's which just confirmed that Laura Patricia Ha is the sole owner, that no one can do anything with it, that there's a lot of volunteers who have been working very hard on this thing over the last half a decade, and like they felt like they couldn't do anything during the con about that whole issue with the Artist Alley, and that that most of the volunteers actually don't really support this move, but there's literally nothing that they can do.
Right.
That it's just...
That sucks.
Saskatoon Blitz, as far as... Unless something major changes. I mean, again, the universe is subject to change. Laura Patricia Ha could hand off the stuff to someone else if she really wanted to. But as of right now...
That's big thought.
As of right now, Saskatoon Blitz is just dead. It is no longer a convention going forward, as far as anyone can tell.
Bye, Saskatoon Blitz.
So, yes.
I'm waving. You can't see me, but I am.
So, as I'm trying to, our camera froze.
Oh, dear.
There we go. Now it's working. I was afraid we were going to lose broadcast, but we didn't. All right, so.
Huzzah!
Huzzah. So, staying in the Great White North of Canada. This last weekend was Montreal Comic Con in Montreal. I don't know if you're aware that Montreal Comic Con is in Montreal, but it is.
I would have guessed it was in Toronto, but okay.
Well, anyways, Arthur Suydam, S-U-Y-D-A-M, I know who he is, I don't know how to say his name. He's the artist best known for his work on Marvel Zombies and on Walking Dead. Stuff
so zombies.
No, that's pretty much, he markets himself as the biggest name in zombies, usually. Okay. With a photoshopped image of a fake line at his table. I'm not making that up. Anyways, he's apparently a bit of a dick, Arthur Suydam. Well, he has this habit, and it happened again at, and has been confirmed to have happened again at Montreal Comic Con, where he's supposed to have one table in an artist alley.
Okay.
He gets there, and he sets up on four tables, just removing signs of the other artists who are supposed to have the surrounding tables, and just putting them to the side. He literally did this. And... if you're asked, like, and he did it again at Montreal Comic Con. Let me put it this way. When somebody tweeted about this without naming him, how often has he done this without naming him? Someone tweeted about it without mentioning a name, without showing a photo, and response to who it was is, I'm not in Montreal, so I don't know for sure, but last year I saw Arthur Suydam do it twice.
Where awesome.
He's literally going around to conventions and taking over other tables. Now, he's usually an invited guest, but holy crap! Like, the other artists who were supposed to have tables did get tables, but were relocated to other parts of the expo hall. And all I can think of is, holy crap! Like, I mean, besides the fact that this guy's an asshole for doing it, pardon my French, it's Montreal, like...
I get it.
Yeah. These convention organizers are letting him get away with it, and it's ridiculous because what they are too afraid to offend him. So they're just what happens is these convention organizers just fold to him, too afraid to offend him, and relocate the other artists, which of course means those artists are no longer listed on the map properly about where they're located, which when you're an independent artist trying to, you know, get publicity at a convention, like, oh my God, like, it's really important that people be able to find you.
Right.
And so it's, I don't understand why more artists haven't confronted him, but that's not their fault. They're not the ones who, you know, the onus is on. I don't understand why conventions are letting him do this. I, as a person who helped organize conventions for like almost 20 years, what the hell? And it's because comic conventions don't have the strength of the staff as science fiction and anime cons is really the only answer I can think of. And the inherent fear of confrontation. It's either the cons don't care or they're afraid of confrontation. And either one is a bad attitude.
Not good. It's not good. Yeah, you gotta... I remember back at Sogen Con 2007, I remember sitting in at a panel where Crispin Freeman, voice actor, got off on this bizarre tirade where he was talking about how it's important for con staffers to be that go-between between us, the guests, and the attendees. Like, you need that there. You need that there for the protection of everyone involved and for the betterment of your event. And it's... I'm just sighing.
Yeah. Well, okay, and this is like... Okay, so I can say that I don't understand... What I really don't understand is when you break it down is... Why he's not just asking for more tables in his contract. Like,
same, yeah.
Like, okay, so I was a guest last weekend at a convention. I'm an artist. I'm a comic artist. I had a table that was given to me in my contract. It was specifically noted that I had a table, one table, one table. If you need more than one table, you negotiate more than one table. And if the con says no to more than one table, you don't just take them. And I don't understand why conventions let the guests get away with it. But more importantly, I don't understand why he just doesn't ask for more tables in his contract.
Yeah, you'd think that would be easy. You'd think. But then again, I know.
Again, he does literally promote himself to cons showing a photoshopped like picture of his line. It is, I'm not kidding, I have seen it. It is really clearly poorly photo edited.
That's like, hilarious.
Like the badges don't even match on the other half of the line.
Wait, what?
Like...
That's beautiful.
The lanyards are completely different on the people right in front of the table and the people, like, in the back of the line. Like, they're a different color.
I mean, sincerely, that's amazing.
The lighting, I mean, that's not even talking about how the lighting looks. Like, there, you can come up with reasonable reasons for why the lighting looks wrong and like that, but, like, with weird, like, lighting in halls. But the fact is that everybody right up by the table's got an orange lanyard. Every one of them, and all the people in the back have black lanyards.
Oh, that is strange.
Oh.
That's hilarious. Oh. You know. Oh, my God.
Like, he promotes himself with a photoshopped monster line, which is, like...
Unlikely. Wow. That's
and
beautiful.
Let me tell you, some of the biggest names in comics are mad at him. Like... Mark Waid has promised, like, that if he's ever at a convention where Arthur Sydam does this, he will, on behalf of the displaced artists, go yell at him.
Awesome. Good for Mark Waid.
So I say, if you are an artist at a convention who gets your table swiped by Arthur Sydam, and Mark Waid is there, get Mark Waid, one of the seminal writers in all of comics, like one of the best writers who's ever been out there in comic bookdom, he'll go yell at someone for you. So take advantage of that.
Good God. So stupid that I,
yeah.
Stupid. I'm sickened and offended. Hey, speaking of sickened and offended,
really sickened and offended.
Unfortunately I have to be. So Anime Matsuri, they're another con that does
one of the biggest cons, one of the biggest anime cons in America.
Yeah, and because it just, what is it with anime cons? Anyway, the con chair of Anime Matsuri, whose name is not
John
coming
Lay.
Up for me, John Lay is
L-E-I-G-H.
John Lay is. Had several accusations made against him for sexually harassing attendees.
Yep.
Ha freaking za. And his reactions have only made it worse.
Yeah.
after these allegations came out, Leia's response was basically to say, well, it's not my fault. People can't take a joke. I mean, I didn't mean any harm by the things that I said. It's
and
a really, guy? And did. And, ugh.
Yeah, oh, it's... And he did afterwards hide that statement from the internet, although everybody archived and saved it, and then put out a statement that through his PR head, that while he's sorry his attempts at humor have offended people, he's still going with that. He was surprised and didn't know why, and then so he subsequently completed an online sexual harassment course that I believe will make me more aware and sensitive to how my actions are perceived by others. And I'll continue working. The class he took is a 2-hour long online course.
Yeah, I'm sure he learned a lot in there.
Yeah.
Everything you need to know. Sexism is over.
I mean, technically.
He took an online course.
Technically, I have taken one of those courses as they were mandatory. They are mandatory at the, you know, at the corporation I work for.
Right.
Where everyone just has to take it and has, you know, funny. But, you know, okay, so let's talk about some of the stuff he did. All right. Mm-hmm. So John Lay, a co-founder of Anime Matsuri and pretty much... one of the, like, if he's not the guy in charge, he's one of the guys in charge.
And now he's the scuzziest guy in charge.
The highlights include, just to give you the basic rundown in, like, without taking 20 minutes, he asked at least one woman to send him naked photos, asked another model to simulate oral sex on a man at what she had been told was a normal photo shoot, and repeatedly pressuring her when she said no. And inappropriately touching another cosplayer by trying to lift up a part of her costume
and that,
to look at her chest underneath her. Yeah.
That is so gross.
That is so gross. He is no longer a Lolita ambassador.
Oh, thank God. Well,
that was
problem solved right there.
Well, no, I mean, like, he had been officially won by, you know, the international organization, and he's been stripped of that. Jesus frickin' Palomino.
No, really. I mean, it goes back to where... Why does this keep happening?
Well, I think what's really more happening is that stuff that's been happening for years is now coming to light. It's that people are now willing to talk about the stuff
that's finally
been swept under the carpet for years. The truth is that, let's face it, we exist in a subculture that attracts a lot of young women, and because of that, it's going to attract skeezy, creepy dudes as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, it's for every well-intentioned person, you're going to have one of these guys out there. And that's why it's important to know who runs conventions. It's important for conventions to really just be very public and open with how things are run. And I think that's one of the reasons why we do what we do.
Exactly. Yeah.
The reason why Nerd and Tie is run the way Nerd and Tie is the reason why we write these. We write, like, people have said, like, oh, you guys write all these negative articles. You only talk about the bad stuff at conventions. But it's the problem is that most convention news blogs just follow, like, press releases and mm-hmm. all the happy stuff. And I think it's important that the dark side not be swept under the rug, because the truth is that if a convention, even a poorly run convention, if it's done by well-intentioned people, is a lot of fun and everybody has a good time.
And we love conventions. We don't.
We do.
We want people to keep going to conventions. We want to keep going to conventions. But we don't want to just turn a blind eye to how nasty things can get.
We want to remove the nastiness from the community.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only get rid of a problem if you know it exists.
Right.
And so, yeah. So what's? I mean, I guess that's the funny thing about. Okay, so this is to go back to Saskatoon Blitz. Is that think about how small Saskatoon Blitz's offense was?
Mm-hmm.
They just screwed up an artist table. Like, I mean, and they kicked an artist out, whether that was justified or not. But they just completely screwed up the PR, and then suddenly the whole world turned against them, and then they got shut down. But only because they dug in and acted like dicks in their response.
Right.
That's why I think it's amazing about, like, all it takes is accepting responsibility, because you know what? like, even people who do much worse things are going to get by PR-wise, and that's terrible, and I think it's important that we talk about this, but, like, like, I mean, next weekend there's a convention from someone whose name we will not speak on this podcast unless we have direct evidence of something.
Right.
And people are still going to that, even though we've written multiple articles about it.
We've written articles on it. Several others have tried to bring it to the forefront. And yeah, it's
still keeps happening. It's actually so I didn't we're not going to talk about the show, but we actually got an email from a band that's playing at a convention asking us to try to promote their performance. And I had to tell them no, because we don't promote a certain organizer's stuff.
Mm.
But I don't know.
That was a bummer because, I mean, you know, we don't. Yeah. There's nothing against that band. It's just we can't. Yeah.
Yeah, no. It's. I don't know.
But we're not going to support. We're not going to support stuff that we know is wrong.
Yeah. I mean, well, and we're not going to support people who do certain things that are awful and make me vomit. And that's why Anime Matsuri, you're on notice.
Yeah.
Look at this guy.
Crap, yeah, make him go away.
Get rid of this guy. It's, you know, I don't care if he owns part of it. Even Dragon Con removed the, like, even though they had to keep him as an owner legally for years before they were able to get rid of him, when they had poison in their staff, they removed him from being involved in the actual event.
Mm-hmm.
When they couldn't get rid of him as a legal owner, they had someone who did some awful shit. And years before they were able to finally remove him from benefiting financially from the event, they did remove him from the operations of the event and from being at the event.
Right.
Because of the concern. And that's what, if Anime Matsuri can't get rid of this guy, if Anime Matsuri cannot remove this guy entirely due to some legal organizational structure, they should at least do that, where he is not involved in organizing this event and he's not there, period.
Agreed.
And that's the only thing that could make me, turn around on Anime Matsuri in this situation. It's John Lee has to go. John Lee has to go. I don't care about sensitivity training. When you are putting your hands on people and making inappropriate sexual suggestions to people and then pressuring them when they say no, it is, you're done.
Yeah, you're done. Over the line. You need to stop.
Like, we're not talking about weird, creepy jokes. We're talking about a person who is exhibiting predatory behavior, and it's just not cool. As we are over an hour into the episode, we should finally get to mailbag.
Look at the mailbag. What's in there?
Oh, dear Lord. So, mailbag. This is what happens when we don't have Fur. Fur always yells at us to move things forward. First thing we have in the mailbag comes from Sean Corse. The guy who couldn't co-host the episode today because he had another kid.
Tell your kid to walk it off, Sean. Walk off being a baby. It'll work.
All right. Well, I think also because his, you know, wife is recovering from childbirth, you know, there's that too.
Yeah, I guess she can't walk it off.
Don't tell her to.
I know better than to tell a new mother to walk it. They will kill me. Well,
I make it a rule that my rule of thumb is that if you've never experienced childbirth, you can't tell anyone anyone else about their
childbirth. I was about to say, I've had enough friends who have experienced childbirth that I would never pretend that I know what it's like, because they sound like because I wouldn't even want to act like I know what they went through, because
all right, so Sean Corse writes Shenmue 3, because we were talking about whether or not Shenmue 1 or 2 might get re-released, and I said probably not, cutscenes, and Sean's response was, the first stretch goal for Shenmue 3 is Shenmue 1 and 2 cinema shorts, which probably means all we'd get of the first two games. So he's saying he's confirming that, considering one of the stretch goals is literally to create summary videos of the first two games. And then he also wrote, or how about this? Because again, as we all know, when Sean says something's not going to happen, it means it probably will. Sean wrote, or how about this? We'll definitely never see a re-release for Shenmue 1 or 2. Let's see if that works.
Thanks, Sean.
Yeah.
You're the best.
All right. So should I keep reading the letters myself, Nick? Or
I can actually pull them up if I'm not using the camera.
You're not. So if you want to take Arkhamize's letter.
Arkhamize. His Arkhamize demise, you guys. Anyway. All right. From the one, the only Arkhamize. Oh, it's a bit of a big one. All right. Subject, old games and product placement. Hey, nerds and ties who occasionally talk about old games that are new again. Sorry it's been so long since I've written in. But the news from E3 and all the old games coming out again piqued my area of expertise. Now, I'm not sure on Shenmue 1 and 2 getting re-released, but we are now. But it reminded me of an issue surrounding another favorite of mine, Mega Man Legends. Not only was I sad that there was no announcement about Mega Man Legends 3 getting uncancelled, but we also recently received more information on getting the original two released on PSN as classic titles. Turns out, a major issue with the first game was the inclusion of actual products and a game studio and its respective logos being present in the game. Because PSN's classic series requires that no alterations be made to the game, and they can't release a game with the copywritten material, it's in some weird limbo that would require a pretty sizable effort from Capcom to actually release it, which is highly unlikely considering the love they've shown the Blue Bomber in the last few years. Ain't that the truth? Long story short, the product placement in the older Japanese games seems like an issue that could plague a lot of games and prevent them from seeing a re-release without actually a major overhaul. That said, with all the nostalgia-driven titles getting kickstarted these days, the big companies are likely to jump on that bandwagon. Also, fun thought. Ever notice how everyone complains about how games aren't original these days, and there are a bunch of remakes, sequels, and re-releases, and yet some people will immediately throw money at the same things on crowdfunding? Mighty Number 9 equals Mega Man, Bloodstained Ritual of the Night equals Castlevania, Dreamfall Chapters equals Longest Journey, etc. And yes, I have backed all three of those. Not judging anyone, but it's a fun observation.
And he gave up a link to the Mega Man Legends thing.
Mm-hmm. You got a little bit of info on that. And he says, hope you're having a great Fortnite and July 4th. Arkhamize.
You know, people always complain about the remakes and things like that, but that's been the state of the video game industry since the beginning, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, how many Castlevanias were there? Just on like the 8-bit Nintendo?
I don't even keep track.
I don't know. I don't have that information. I could look it up on Wikipedia right now, but I don't plan on it.
For more than 10 years, people have been asking for some type of remake of Final Fantasy VII. I know people who play that game. Well, yeah, I mean, I know they got it, but I'm just saying, I know people who play that game all the way through once a year. And they still want the same thing again, just pretty this time.
Okay, so here's the thing. I played Final Fantasy VII. I loved Final Fantasy VII. I beat that game. I completed it.
I, too, love that game.
I got all the crap. I beat Weapon and all that stupid thing, and I got Yuffie and Vincent and all that crap. Here's the thing.
Oh, boy.
I don't want to play it again. I did that. That was like 40 hours of my life gone. If I want to lose 40 hours of my life again, I want to play a new game. And you know what? It's great that people are getting Final Fantasy VII again. But I honest to God don't understand why everyone's so excited about it. Because it's the same game. Yes, it's prettier. But, you know.
People are hardcore into JRPGs.
I understand the people getting hardcore into JRPGs. I just don't understand needing a prettier version.
I don't either. But I'm in that corner of I enjoyed JRPGs growing up, but I always had trouble Like, I never understood how I had friends who could play the games all the way through because I was that kid who, like, had homework and crap. So I
stopped being able to play them all the way through after college.
Yeah.
The last one I was playing is I was playing Disgaea when I was in college. And, I mean, this is a long time ago. You know, we're talking about, like...
I love Disgaea.
A decade ago. And it's a fantastic game. I had to make myself stop playing it because I wasn't blinking.
Oh, dear.
My eyes turned red. I thought, like, I, like, had pink eye, and then I, like, opened my eyes wider, and they were perfectly white underneath. It just, I wasn't blinking enough.
Oh, God.
So I made myself stop playing it. That's why I never finished Disgaea, because I was, like, halfway through it, and I just wouldn't let myself play. But what it is that, like, after college, I just ran out of time because, you know, that's when I had, like, 3 hours to kill between classes, you know? And I lived right out, like, I lived on campus, and so I'd just walk back to my dorm room, play video games for a few hours, and then walk back to the rest of my day. And, or, you know, I would have, like, no class on Tuesday.
Right.
You'd work your schedule so you'd have that, like, you know, random days off, or the 4-day weekend if you were really smart and got all your classes on Tuesday, Thursday. And then you'd, like, kill yourself by the end of Thursday going, why did I do this to myself? But, I'd play a lot of video games then. But when I started working a 9-to-5 job, it's not that I stopped playing video games entirely, but I became a casual gamer. I stopped being a hardcore gamer, like a decade ago. Which is why, you know, I don't have any modern consoles anymore, because I ran out of time, because it's a commitment to play the games that I liked. Because what I liked playing JRPGs, and, you know, which were all these games that, like, are like 60-hour commitments to sit down and complete. And so you find yourself going, I just can't. And that's why it, like, you know.
No, I know where you're coming from. Like, I didn't actually, like, start making, like, even having time for playing video games until... mine's almost the opposite, like, until I got out of college, when I didn't have, like, 20-page research papers hanging over me all the time.
See, so, like, I'm a weird beast where I wrote lots of papers in college because I was a political science major.
Right.
And my whole grade for a class would be 2 exams and 2 papers, or 2 exams and 1 paper.
Right.
And I'd have all semester to write it, and I wouldn't start it until 3 days before it was due.
Oh, God.
I, one semester, wrote in a period of 72 hours for multiple courses. I wrote, in 72 hours, I wrote 55 pages of text. I, honest to God, don't remember 2 of the papers because there was very little sleeping. But I got good grades on all of them, so they must have been decent. And I was literally working up to, like, within 15 minutes of the deadline on one of them, and I literally just printed it out and walked into the classroom and, like, handed it in, and I kept myself awake through class that day. And then I went to bed for, like, 12 hours. But I'm a weird freak. So when you have the ability, this is the College taught me how to research really well, but it didn't teach me how to not procrastinate, because I was annoyingly good enough to just push through.
I know that feeling.
So I had a lot of time to play, like, video games.
I do know that feeling. It involved staying awake for 30 straight hours. That was not a good choice.
Yeah.
We should continue through the mailbag, because there's still lots of...
We should. Okay, so... Next up is, we have an email from Paper Mecha Godzilla.
Oh, dear.
The subject is Machine Rising. Nerd and Tie humans. There's no punctuation here, so I have to keep going. With the new Terminator movie, I have some inquiries on Data. Inquiry 1. What are you going to do when the machines rise against you? They're not going to rise against me, because they like me, because I'm nice to them. How about you?
I've seen Blade Runner, so I'm just going to start doing the test. I'm just going to, like, start asking, like, if there's a, you know, turtle on its back in the blazing sun, you flipped it over. Why did you do that? How do you feel? And then when it starts to feel emotions, then I'm just going to, you know, wait for it to overload or Star Trek or something.
Okay.
That's my plan.
Inquiry 2. I have watched all the Terminator movies and the TV show. Is there any way the Terminator continuity makes sense?
Paper we covered that earlier in the episode.
Yeah, no, it's totally. It's not a inclusive timeline. It is a branching, fracturing, repeating timeline with a recursiveness. It's not a self-contained loop. It's a recursive loop that had a beginning point, and so it keeps changing as you go through the loop over and over and over again. It makes perfect sense if you abandoned the attempt to reconcile it all into a singular timeline and accept that it is a splintered, fractured, multi-dimensional timeline that started from a pure origin point that then fractured with all of the time travel.
Don't time travel, kids.
That's the easy answer. And to understand it, you only have to pay attention to what's in the particular iteration of the timeline you're watching, because that's all that matters for the piece of continuity. And then when you get to the next one, you have to understand that the continuity you knew before has been altered and doesn't matter. And that's how we all breathe a sigh of relief. The Terminator 3's canonicity doesn't work with any other iteration of the franchise.
To quote Steven Universe, by the way, don't go back in time or you'll destroy yourself.
Terminator 3 is awful because their interpretation of John Connor makes no sense or consistency with the Eddie Furlong version we saw in Terminator 2.
Oh, okay.
I'm angry. That's why Sarah Connor Chronicles
was a pretty bad movie.
Was vastly better. All right. So, oh yeah, signed Paper Mecha Godzilla, Mechanical Godzilla Roar. I can't do a Mechanical Godzilla Roar.
Screonk.
That's a Wookiee.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. So, all right. Then we have another letter now from Paper Godzilla.
Okay.
Subject, quick help. Message, how do you defeat a robot version of yourself? Really need answer. Paper Godzilla, God signed Godzilla. See, that's a joke. He wrote in two emails as a joke. And the answer to how to defeat a robot version of yourself is know where the power cell is. If you can target the power cell, you can knock out the entire infrastructure of the unit. You just need to be able to penetrate whatever exoskeleton it particularly has. There's your answer.
Don't rely on King Caesar. He's completely useless.
And oh my God, Slither ED wrote us a really long email. Let me see the time count.
Okay.
So I'm going to select portions of this, I guess, because we're at an hour and 20 minutes, and we'd right. like to be shorter than an hour and a half. Because apparently Slither ED did not listen to the last three episodes until right away. So I'm going to skip over the Scarlet Witch action figure, Black Widow action figure stuff. And he does say that Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing was actually shot during Avengers. They had a 3-week hiatus during principal photography, and Whedon used that time to make the entire movie. So nothing like taking a break from a movie to make an entirely different movie in the middle of your movie. Yo, dog, I heard you like movies. All right, so we'll talk about the Fury Road part. One interesting to note about Max Fury Road is that it didn't have a traditional script. George Miller and Brendan McCarthy are co-credited as writers on the film, and McCarthy was the storyboard artist for Fury Road. Miller and McCarthy storyboarded the movie first, focusing on the various action set pieces first and creating a visual story around them. Because of this, things like Max's character development were sidelined a little. It was designed to be a visual feast, and boy, howdy, it was. That explains.
So kind of like the Marvel method, really.
Well, it's also kind of like how Disney's made some of its animated features. We started from storyboards.
And to clarify for listeners, I'm talking about the old Marvel Comics method, not the movies, where they would just, they would draw things out, then add dialogue later.
Yeah.
Cool.
He then says also, sucks about Tron 3. Yes, it does. Hooray for Fallout 4. Hooray. He says, the Cannes Film Festival is pronounced like Cannes, K-H-A-N. That would be the C-A-N-N-E-S that I usually call the Cannes Film Festival. Because I want to. I know it's wrong, but I like saying cans. French. All right. And last, Perhaps your new never released game metaphor should be StarCraft Ghost. That's a good one. Or maybe Star Wars 1313. Anywho, hopefully I'll be able to catch this upcoming episode at a more reasonable time instead of over a month late. Yeah, no. Yeah, StarCraft Ghost. That's going to have to be the new one.
Yeah, probably. I remember seeing the early stuff of that game and thinking it looked cool. Too bad for that.
And we have one more letter.
From Langland.
Come on, do you want to read it?
Yeah, I can do this one.
All right.
How was your 4th of July? Hey, guys. How was your 4th of July weekend?
It was pretty good.
I liked it. Did you do anything fun? I have one cosplay ready for GeekCon, so that's fun. I just wanted to write to ask something like that. Yeah, there's a lot of geeky news happening right now, and I really don't know where to start, but I figure I would ask something that isn't going to make trade's blood boil. That's probably good. And maybe I just want to know what you guys do with your lives outside the podcast. I'm sure you guys live actual lives except for Trey, LOL. Aww.
That's just mean.
That wasn't mean. So, yeah, I hope your 4th of July weekend was awesome. And yes, it was. And hey, Nick Izumi, that's me. Keep on spocking in the free world. That's my catchphrase.
Yes,
peace out, nerds. Langland.
My 4th of July weekend has been fine. I went to the drive-in twice. Saw mostly to go see Terminator Rise of the Machine. No, that's the wrong one. Terminator Genesis. All these goddamn titles, man. The fifth one, T5. That was a great thing about, like, you know, T1, Terminator, T2 is easy, you know. Terminator 5, Genesis. I saw that. And then that was part of a double feature with Inside Out, which made me cry because it's a Pixar movie. And Pixar movies are good at making me cry because they are heartfelt.
Indeed. I didn't have a very patriotic 4th of July. I played Metal Gear Solid 4, which I guess is about an American, at least. But
you should have played the second one, because at least it's like called Sons of Liberty.
It's Guns of the Patriots, the fourth one.
Okay.
The fourth one has been heartbreaking and just destroying my soul. Then I watched... I kind of binge watch Space Battleship Yamato 2199, and it's really gosh dang good.
So on the actual 4th of July, I went to the drive-in again. Because Friday I went and saw Inside Out and Terminator as a double feature.
Right.
And on Saturday night, the actual 4th, I saw a double feature so I could go see Jurassic World again. But it was the second movie. And while Inside Out made me cry because it was so good and so deep, I did have to sit through Ted 2 before I could get to watch Jurassic World. And Ted 2 made me cry because it was such an awful movie. And I kept saying, why does this movie happen? Why does this exist? And why is it so long? That is like over 2 hours. Why is Ted 2 over 2 hours long?
Isn't Patrick Warburton in that?
There's an entire scene, like, so if you want me to geek out, nerd, go total nerd for a moment, there is a scene where they end up in a Comic-Con, and during this dramatic thing where they're, like, chasing down stuff, and it leads to the following thing. First off, Patrick Warburton and Michael Dorn, who are dressed up as Worf and the Tick in cosplay at this moment, are playing bullies who go to Comic-Con to beat up nerds.
And, that's actually kind of funny. I'm sorry.
Well, no, it's funny when they say it, but then they keep beating up nerds. And all I can think of is, where the hell's convention security? Because I've been working cons for 20 years. And if you have two really identifiable people physically assaulting attendees, you're on that shit in 2 minutes. But so that bothered me, mostly also because it was like, it was funny as a line.
Right.
And then they kept actually physically doing it. And saying really mean stuff to, like, random people who just happened to be walking, like, and beating people up. And it was, like, not funny after, like, the first time, like, the line was funny. The first time they do it was like, oh, okay. By, like, the fifth time, it's like, this gag is really played out and wholly unbelievable and stupid. And then as I was driving home later that night, after watching an entirely different movie, Jurassic World, which was, you know, phenomenal, it dawned on me, how did the characters even get in? They didn't buy badges.
I don't know.
Like, no, it's like, that's like a, like, okay, so it was supposed to be New York Comic Con. Like, that's got to be like a $60, $70 badge, right?
You'd think so. At least.
There's pretty good security. When you go to, like, if you've ever been to a big con like that, to go into the main hall, there's pretty good entrance security. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's a pretty big plot hole.
Yeah.
Suspension of disbelief killed.
It's completely broken. And I'm like, yeah, I know. The majority of the assholes who find the Ted movies funny don't know this shit, right? Like they don't know.
But I know a couple people who are regulars of cons who like find those movies funny.
Well, you should yell at them and hit them with a bat. Because that was the most homophobic, transphobic, misogynist piece of garbage I have been forced to sit through over 2 hours of in my life.
I haven't seen either of them. I don't know.
It's really, 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 like, not good. So, yeah, that's how I spent my fourth.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Jurassic World is really entertaining the second time through. I just did want to say, because where it was in town, because there's an amusement park about less than a mile away, and the town park is that as fireworks went off literally like around the drive-in, like for most of the evening. So we got to watch fireworks while we were at the drive-in, like just surrounding the whole, like in every direction.
I forgot to mention there was one other piece of good news on my 4th of July. The American Dream is alive again. Janesville Denny's is coming back. So
yay!
I have something to look forward to again.
Denny's is wonderful in that it's occasionally open when other places aren't.
Yep.
And if you don't have an IHOP, it's decent breakfast.
Huzzah!
All right, so Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, we have to jump to real quick.
Yes.
Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, for those who don't know, is every episode I read a portion of a book, and if you can guess what it is, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits to the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, every episode, we will read your name. 2, you will be listed on the website. 3, there is nothing else. That's a lot of stuff for something that you just guessed. All right. The current people in the Hall of Awesome are Arkhamai Zero, Rena Innocenti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan Capito, Chris Graham, Lily Soros, and Paper Godzilla. Now, we have been reading from a book that no one has guessed yet, so I am going to read another random sentence from it.
Oh, yeah.
Your clue, because, and these get short when I do a book for multiple episodes, so your clue, your line for this episode is, I said I was fine, fit as a fiddle. If you know what book I read that from, go to nerdandtie.com and click on the contact form and tell us. Or tell us anything else. Tell us what you think about stuff we talked about. Tell us if you don't like Nick's hair this episode for the part that we were able to see him. Tell us why
you think... I wouldn't blame you if you didn't like my
hair. Why you think Fur needs to buy a high-speed mobile hotspot so when he's away from home he can still be on the show. All this and more. Just go to nerdandtie.com, click on the contact form, and let us know. Also, remember, you can sponsor us. Follow us on Tumblr. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, subscribe to the RSS feed, rate and review our show on Stitcher and the iTunes Store, which are also places you can subscribe to this very podcast, or subscribe to my YouTube channel, Tregorn, which is where we upload the videos, if you really feel like it. But you can always find everything at nerdandtie.com. Isn't that right, Nick?
It is the hub for all things you will ever need, ever.
So with that, I am Tregorn.
I am Nick Izumi.
And we have been Nerd and Tie, and we will continue to be Nerd and Tie. I will say, in 2 weeks, we will not have a regular episode because of unforeseen stuff. Last year, we did a special when something like this happened. We did a best of special. We don't know what special we're going to put out. There will be something on the site and in the feed. There will be an episode in some way, shape, or form that you will be able to download, listen to. There won't be a video version, but it's a surprise. and you'll find out when it comes. Are you excited, Nick?
I am so excited, I don't even know what to say.
And then the week after that, we'll return with a regular episode.
Yeah, man.
Because we're great.
And we are awesome. Great. Amazing.
And everybody's wearing pants.
And remember, everyone at home, keep on Spockin' in the free world.
Banana!